So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, I'm Miss H.
And I'm obviously Mr. O.
Yep, and here we're talking about Love is Blind, Episode 6.
Episode 6. This is when everybody gets off the island. I'm going to keep calling it the island because it just sounds like the island to me.
Feels
it's much
like
better
it.
Than the resort in Cancun, the whatever.
Yes, their resort in Cancun.
I'm going to jump right into it. The show begins with a farewell brunch at the resort, and all the couples get together, and they all talk about how they're ready to get back to reality, but some are more clearly nervous than others about leaving this fantasy land they've been living in. Specifically, Amber thinks that some of the couples are in their head and not their hearts, and they might not make it to wedding day. Then the Lacheys interrupt this brunch and tell us what the next level of the experiment is. So all the couples are going to move into this apartment or condo complex together, and it'll be a neutral space for them to deepen their relationships. Now, this is the part where it makes sense that everybody in the show was from the Atlanta area, because they kind of have to move in together to this neutral space. And if they're going to be engaged, they don't have to move across the country. But they will not be in their own house. They're going to be in this neutral apartment. Mm-hmm. All right. So the couples have, you know, a lot of things to say about this and jokes about the walls being thick enough and everything like that. But none of them seem to ask the obvious logistical questions that immediately spring into my head, at least not on camera anyway. But they will get their phones back and they will be able to see their friends and family. Then they, Lachey's kind of end talking about this, I don't know, they give this weird speech like, will you succeed or will your love wither like a raisin on the vine before midnight on April Fool's Day? I don't know what they were talking about, but there was ominous music and they made it sound scary. So how do we feel about this next setup, this next step of the show? Because like I said, I had obvious logistical questions about this.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I was like, the Atlanta metro area is a very big metro area, like space wise.
Well, yeah.
Right?
And then, I mean, I was going to say, so Lauren and Cameron, so why don't we go ahead and start off with them? They were kind of even talking about like the location of their homes didn't seem close to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, and like, where do you work? Are they going to be working while they're doing this? I had so many questions.
Right. I think they're all Instagram influencers, I want to say, or something where they can work from home or have flexible schedules. I have no idea. So let's start off with Lauren and Cameron. So Lauren and Cameron are sad to be leaving, but they're excited to start their lives together. Lauren and Cameron get to their apartment where they will be staying for the next 3 weeks. Lauren is freaking out since she has to plan a wedding and having to live with someone. She thinks that the next few weeks will be stressful. So then Lauren starts revealing some of her pet peeves to Cameron, which include hearing people chew, keeping the toilet seat up, sharing toothbrushes, and dirty dishes. And so then Lauren asks Cameron, what's your pet peeve? And he says, not being able to share a toothbrush. So Cameron says that he shared a toothbrush with someone before, and Lauren thinks that's nasty. So they're going back to their respective homes to pack up what they need to live with each other for the next few weeks. So Lauren shows off her place, which is a studio, and she's showing Cameron around her place, and he shows her her vision board. And on her vision board, they identify a few elements of their Mexico trip. Spooky. So she was worried about Cameron's judging her place, but he seemed to take it in stride when she reveals her throw everything in there kind of closet. Lauren goes to Cameron's home, which is a 3-bedroom home he has bought in hopes of starting his family. He was thrilled to hear Lauren say that she could envision the empty rooms as baby rooms. Cameron asks Lauren to live there with him, and Cameron says that he was in love before, but then there are things that he knew he wouldn't be able to get past, but he doesn't feel any of that with Lauren. Lauren asks him how he would feel about her keeping her place, and he seems a bit disappointed, but also seems supportive. Okay, so my question for you is, how would you take it if the woman you're about to marry insisted on keeping her own place?
That's weird. I guess it's a matter of... No, that's weird. I could totally see if she was like, I don't want to move into your place and we need like our place. That would make sense to me. But insist on keeping their own place. I would have to know them way better than these people know each other. Right. Because I could see how that actually is reasonable. And I say my own place. What I really am imagining is what she needs is her own space.
Yeah.
And that's a very different type thing.
I can see how someone may kind of view that as they want a safety net. They want, if something were to go wrong, they don't mm-hmm. want to have given up their place. They want something to go back to. And so that would, I can see how some people may interpret that as you're basically coming up with a backup plan, an exit strategy of some kind, and it may not make them feel good about where they stand in their relationship or their confidence in the relationship.
I don't know. I mean, I see what you're saying, but I don't necessarily see wanting to feel safe and secure as the same thing as not being fully committed to this relationship.
Okay. That's a good thing because I can see how other people would think that, but I am going to be that person that insists on keeping my place. So in the future, if I ever get married, I can't imagine me being able to share my space with someone else. And like, I have a decently sized place for 1.5 people, I've decided. Like, maybe if half a person like moved in here or lived here part time, like there would be enough space. But I don't know. Like, I've expanded into the space really nicely. I don't know if there's room for anyone else.
It's funny because, you know, we're not old, but like, mm-hmm. I feel like the older I get, the more open to non-traditional setups like that would be. Like,
yeah.
I could totally see making it work and being married to somebody I didn't actually live with. I could do that.
Yeah. What I would really like is I would like someone to live like next door to me. So it's like, can you just get the place like next door to me? And then it's like, I have my place, you have your place, but we're so close that it's like pretty much like if we were super rich and we just had different wings of a house.
Right. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
That's my ideal. I can make it work.
Yeah. So it depends on how I feel about the person. It's a very case specific question about that.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So something that I've noticed with the two of them is, remember I said that production is trolling us and they freaking kept on showing us crotch shots of Cameron the last time. Uh-huh. Again, this time too. And I don't know what it is. It's specifically with Cameron. I don't know what they're trying to do, but they keep on like trying to make it look like, oh, we're going to show them holding hands. And so they're like,
but it's just like them waist down.
Yeah. And it's just like, okay, hello, there's Cameron's crotch on the screen. And like, I have a pretty big TV. So it's like, okay, there's a lot of crotch on the screen right now. It's like, why is this happening?
It's a lot of crotch. Yeah.
It's a lot of crotch. So
that's interesting. I did not notice the giant crotches on my screen. Yeah, maybe I'm just,
it's not anybody else. It's just Cameron.
Maybe everybody else like saw the footage and got to reject it. It was like, no, I don't want that giant shot of my crotch. Get that off this camera. Right,
which is funny because my friend actually listened to this podcast and he's like, oh, you're so thirsty for Cameron. So he's probably going to say something about me, like talking about Cameron's crotch for the last 2 minutes.
There you go.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with being thirsty for Cameron's crotch. It's just like, why do we keep on getting trolled by production and like it being in our face all the time?
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah. All right. So the toothbrush thing.
Yes.
I understand where she's coming from.
Yeah.
But I also think it's weird that you're like, oh, I don't want to share a toothbrush with somebody that literally puts their tongue in your mouth.
I'm going to side with her on this one. I think it's gross.
I'm with Cameron. I would respect it. I just don't care. Whatever.
It's yeah. Just, okay. To me, it's kind of on the same level of like tongue scraper. Would you want to share a tongue scraper with someone else?
I don't use a tongue scraper, so.
Okay, but if you used a tongue scraper, because thinking about what a tongue scraper is, it's like literally collecting bacteria, right? Mm-hmm. From one person's mm-hmm. mouth. So if you were to share a tongue scraper, that just, it seems extra gross.
Yeah.
But it's the same idea, right?
Mm-hmm. I suppose, I don't know. It feels a little different. I don't know why. I don't know why.
I see it being the same because of the tongue scraper analogy. It's like, well, it's picking up gross stuff. I don't know. I wouldn't want to share. I'm with Lauren. I think it's
Well, then
gross.
If you're saying it's picking up gross stuff, then why do you use it twice?
Because it's your own gross stuff, I guess.
Yeah, but you're going to take the gross stuff out of your mouth and then put it back in your mouth? Like if I'm going to put the gross stuff in my teeth.
But this is why you replace your toothbrush every couple months, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Disgusting. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just saying. Okay.
Maybe right, so maybe we should all move to a single use toothbrush situation.
Maybe.
Yeah, right.
So to move on to my short couple. And I mean short as in time on the show, not short, even though I think they're actually short.
Well, Kelly at least is really short.
Yeah. So just like every week, we don't really see much from Kelly or Kenny.
No.
Again, we see him packing up at the hotel and voicing their concerns. Kelly thinks that social media could throw a wrench into everything, which is a continuation of what you thought from last week with the phones. The phones are going to ruin everything. Mm-hmm. And she says it's because of all the hot people you can see.
I guess. On Tinder. I don't know.
But I mean, that's kind of like they should have deleted that now, right?
Instagram?
Instagram, maybe. I don't know. But she was like, there's hot women. There's hot men. I was like, you don't have to look at hot women and men. There's other things on the internet.
Yeah. Cats. Lots of cat memes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not threatened by the cats. All right. Yeah. Kelly tells Kenny about his open book policy. He is giving Kelly full access to all of his texts and DMs because he's not hiding everything. And we don't see much from them after they get back to Atlanta because Kelly never actually gets all the way back to Atlanta. She just switches planes at the airport and flies off to a conference in San Diego. We see them once more having a lovey-dovey FaceTime, and that's about it. So I have one question for you, short thing. Mm-hmm. Did you notice how high up Kenny was holding his phone?
Yes, I did, because I only had three notes on them, and that was one of my three notes. I thought it was very notable. I think it was because he was trying to get his best angle. And the best angle is when you get gravity working with you and basically giving you a facelift. But it's also a very dangerous angle. Like, I don't know. I'm embarrassed to say this, but I've dropped the phone on my face before.
I think I've never dropped a phone on my face when I was talking to someone, but I dropped phones on my face.
I've been like looking at something in bed with it above my head and then dropped it on my face. Freaking hurts.
Yes. Oh, I've done that. Yeah, it does hurt. It does hurt.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, that is my working theory. It's a new theory of romance that I just made up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Is the higher your angle of your arm when you're on FaceTime, the less comfortable you are with someone.
Oh, because you can't have the double chin at all, like even a remote.
Because if you watch old people who have been married forever, and granted they don't know how to use their phones, they're always like staring straight up each other's noses. They're just like,
they're like chin down by their chest, exactly. Where it's like triple chins.
Yeah, they just hold it down and look straight down. They're like that nothing.
So that's true.
It's a good sign for your marriage. The lower you end up holding that phone.
Okay, so Kenny and Kelly are doomed, essentially.
Right now, it's not looking well. I mean, they don't know. They have a lot of getting used to each other. Right.
So, okay, the other thing that I thought was notable about their call, and I mean, wow, we're really picking apart like some like minimal content here. But I thought it was interesting that he seemed to figure out the whole picture-in-picture without the camera guy, because this is something that we have theorized on 90 Day Fiancé. Anytime they video chat with someone, they always put their thumb over their own picture. Like but he didn't do that. And you saw his picture in like the video chat picture. And we also didn't see a camera back there. So it's like, if the Love is Blind people can figure it out, can't other productions
the lower production value show can get it, then yes. The other show should be figure out how to not stand directly behind someone's shoulder.
Right.
Although I wonder if that maybe has to do with why the phone angle was so high.
Oh, if they were like, hold it up so we can see it. Makes sense. Yeah, because then you wouldn't see the camera guy in the background because they're in a different angle.
Yeah.
Instead, they just make him look like a weirdo narcissist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. Let's go back to what I find to be deeply troubling about them. Kelly has full access to the
full
phone?
Access.
That seems weird.
It does. It does. Because there is other things in my private messages and in my text that I don't necessarily want my partner to see that aren't me trying to hide a secret girlfriend.
Ooh, I want to know what this is. What do you have?
All right, well, I'm sorry. Are you never going to complain about your partner to your friends or to your mom or anything?
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Right? Little things like that. Like there's all kinds of things that I don't need them to see about, you know. I definitely, if I had a boyfriend or girlfriend, would not need them to see how much I text about Animal Crossing right now.
Yeah, it's probably not the most attractive thing. But I'm pretty sure you're talking to me most of the time about Animal Crossing.
Most of the time, yes.
So that's not good for either one of us, really. I blame it on the quarantine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, I'm not supporting it either way. I don't really think someone should have full access because I think there are deeper issues. And I don't necessarily know if giving someone full access is really addressing the issue at hand. Because the issue at hand is, and I kind of get where Kenny's coming from. He's trying to give her full access because he doesn't want her to be suspicious of anything. So it's more preventative than anything. Because, I mean, nothing's really happened. They've barely been together. He hasn't even had his phone. So obviously she's not going to see anything at this point. Mm-hmm. He hasn't even had a chance to mess up. But I think it's preventative, like peace of mind. But then that makes me like feel like there are deeper issues if that person automatically needs that peace of mind. Like, why doesn't she just trust you? There's no reason why you can't be trusted at this point.
The ideal relationship, there doesn't have to be open access because nobody's requesting open access.
Yeah.
And everybody is just fine with everybody. Like, I would say like, oh, I would show it to her, but she never asked. But that doesn't come up. It's something that doesn't even come up.
Right.
Because nobody is even thinking about why would I need to see into their phone.
Yeah.
That's not an issue that came up.
So I don't know. It just seems like there are really deep issues here that I don't think having full access to the phone is really addressing specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah,
don't
she definitely has some issues with the phone that we might hear more of later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's move on to Giannina and Damien. Okay, so Giannina says that she's curious about the outside world. And the way she says and talks about it is just weird to me. She's like, I'm curious about the outside world. And just like her tone of voice, and I don't know, she's weird to me.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, and how things are going to change. So they get to their apartment and Damien starts to unpack. But Gigi says that she doesn't ever unpack the day that she gets back. But they're unpacking anyway, and Gigi says that she dresses for her mood. And Damien says that that's probably why she has so many outfits. Giannina is really wrapped up in trying to read Damien, and he is very scared of losing her. So they're at this party, which is Barnett's birthday party, and they get in this big blowout argument where Giannina says that she doesn't like awkward situations, so she decides to make it more awkward by yelling at Damien to listen in front of everyone. So Damien throws back in her face that she's self-sabotaging right now, and he walks out of the party. So we'll probably talk more about the argument when you summarize their everybody. But my question for you is, do you really think that Giannina is self-sabotaging?
Yes, I actually do buy that because A, she said she does it in the pods directly. I always self-sabotage whenever anything's going well. And B, he didn't really do anything.
No, he didn't do anything. I'm not saying
like
that he did
something. He made like a kind of an awkward, ill-received joke and backpedaled from it. And that was it. Like, and then she just said, kept saying, listen, and then didn't say anything. And then said, listen again.
You're not listening to me. It's like, well, listening to you say what?
Yeah, listen to you say what? What are you saying?
Right.
And a lot of people confuse not listening with not agreeing.
Yeah.
Right. She said, well, I don't like it when you go ahead and search out awkward situations. And he's like, well, I didn't search out awkward situations. And she's like, you're not listening to me. And it's like, well, I did listen to what you said. I just didn't agree with it.
That's a very good point. She is probably just frustrated that he's not on the same page as her, which isn't the same as listening.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't really take it. I mean, I didn't interpret it as Giannina self-sabotaging. I think Giannina is just, she's got a crazy streak. I think that's just how it is. I think that's just who she is. And I think that that does make a relationship challenging to have to deal with her. But I don't think that she is doing it in a way that is trying to ruin her relationship. I just think she's crazy. That's my interpretation of it.
I guess. I don't think the self-sabotage is necessarily a conscious decision for her to say, oh, this relationship is going too well and I must destroy it. But it kind of goes with the crazy streak.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't see it as like, because I feel like self-sabotaging, like I interpret that as, you know, something's going really, really well, and I see that it's going to go really well. So I need to somehow destroy it because this closeness scares me.
Yeah, I think one way to destroy it is to get in a fight, is to pick a fight over nothing. That's one way to do that.
But I don't know. I feel like even if she knew that this guy was super committed, or, uh-huh. you know, even if she was, like, willing to commit to him, I don't know. I feel like this is a crazy streak that's going to come out no matter what.
Yeah, and like I said, because the last two times they got into fights were over nothing. He made an offhanded comment, and she just, like, grabbed onto it and was... Oh my God, I can't believe. And like, and so it's going to be for him was, you know, walk on eggshells, hoping she doesn't take one thing you say and just blow up and scream at you in front of everybody.
Right. I don't know. I just, I also find it cringy that he's kind of throwing it back at her and saying like, well, see what you're doing? You're self-sabotaging.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Which is what you brought up. I think it you brought up with, was it them or was it with
Kim? Yeah, it was them, like, when she first said it. Because it's like, if he's, you know, it's like, she told you that in a vulnerable place. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not meant to be used against her in an argument. Because that's basically what he was doing. Is like, well, I'm going to win this argument by throwing back in your face something that you told me that I should be aware of, but not for this sake. She more so said it in the way with like, just don't give up on me. You know, like I may try to push you away, but don't give up on me.
I hear that. And it is always, you know, almost always a bad move in a fight to start trying to psychoanalyze your the person you're fighting with's motivation. Well, this is because you don't love your mother and blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't need to do that in a fight.
Right. Okay. That's all I had on them.
All right, so let's get started with Barnett and Amber then. All right, so when they get settled into their fake apartment, Amber and Barnett have Chinese food takeout. And in true bro fashion, Barnett eats it straight out of the container, standing at the kitchen counter. They're both looking forward to telling everyone about their relationship, but Amber is more looking forward to it because she's excited, and Barnett is looking forward to it because he's anxious about it. Then we get to the part where they see Barnett's real house. We don't see Amber's house today, this time. It's a one-bedroom detached place, and he's nervous about how messy it is. But Amber is pleasantly surprised that he has furniture, so he probably shouldn't have been as nervous as he was. I will note that he does have a headboard and sheets, which according to Ms. H qualifies him as an adult.
Makes you an adult.
Although the webcam he had on his dresser might qualify him for a different kind of adult.
Gross. I didn't even notice that. So gross.
It's there. While at Barnett's house, they get into a conversation about Amber's financial situation. She says that she has not been as responsible as Barnett, and she works to live rather than lives to work, which that phrase, by the way, is always a huge red flag.
Yeah.
She looks forward to moving in with Barnett because she has been pretty transient, mentioning that she had been homeless and spent time couch surfing. She says she has an average credit score, but only has a single credit card with a $700 limit, which is maxed out on makeup. And she also has $20,000 worth of student debt for a degree that she doesn't have. And that's all that we see from them until we get to the end part that we'll talk about later where Amber throws a birthday party for Barnett. So starting with the end, come on, is there any way Amber has average credit?
No, it's got to be awful. So awful. Because she's what, like 26?
Yeah.
24, 26? Okay, you cannot be 26, only have one credit card, $700 maximum that you have currently maxed out and have good credit score. There is no way. I want to say that when I was 18, I got my first credit card. I want to say that I had a $1,200 limit on that first card that I ever got. So how is it that you only have a $700 limit?
Right. Yeah. $700 limit is, why did they even give you a card? That's crazy.
That seems so unlikely. Okay. I just had a thought about the webcam. So maybe, I'm going to hope, cross my fingers, that it's because he has a dog. And so I know some people set up webcams to kind of like spy on their pets every once in a while. So I'm going to pretend that it's for that.
You can pretend all you want, but I'm sure that's what he tells the girls who aren't into it when they see it.
Gross.
Oh, that's actually from a dog. Don't worry about that.
Oh, his dog is super cute, but it was kind of weird.
So do you
weird.
Like that? Do you like the webcam on the dresser? No, you don't like it? It's for my dog.
The dog is super cute, but it was kind of funny when I noticed a couple things about the dogs. Because, I mean, he has a dog and then Jessica has a dog.
Jessica has a dog,
It's like, why is it that this dog is just freely in your house when you haven't been there? Like,
yes, I'm sure they,
someone dropped off the dog.
Yeah, I bet somebody right dropped off the dog right before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then the other thing I was going to say is the amount of dog hair. You could see it because Amber was wearing black jeans. And she was like, at one point, she was rolling around on the stairs or something like that, just collecting dog hair. And she had so much dog hair on her pants. It was just like, wow.
Oh, yeah. It looked like a very shitty dog.
Yeah. And, well, like, yeah. It looks part German Shepherd.
I almost said it looked almost like part German Shepherd, part Golden Retriever or something like that. And Golden Retrievers and German Shepherds shed a lot.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, I had one. We used to furminate her, and she had we would literally be able to construct another dog with the amount of hair that came out. It was but I was going to say, some German Shepherds are white.
Yeah, my aunt and uncle had a white German Shepherd.
Yeah.
But it didn't quite look like that. This one had looked like it had longer hair, like on the underside. The underside hair made it look like I had some golden in it to me.
Right. Yeah, but I've seen some long-haired German Shepherds too, but yeah, definitely a lot of hair. Whatever kind of dog it was, it has a ton of hair.
Right.
All right. Okay, let's kind of talk about Amber's money situation.
Like I said, anytime somebody says that phrase, "I work to live, I don't live to work," that says to me they don't actually work.
No.
I get what you're going for, is you don't want to be the person that works, you know.
Yeah.
80 hours, 90, 100 hours a week and doesn't have anything that they have this huge pile of money that they can't do anything with. I totally get the incentive behind that. But so many people use that to justify living paycheck to paycheck as in like, which I mean, I know some people have to live paycheck to paycheck and that's a completely different story.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're living paycheck to paycheck because you're going out and spending all of it at clubs or on your makeup or whatever, it kind of lifts out how much easier it is to live and how much better it is to live when you just relieving yourself of the stress of always worrying about next bill.
Right. I kind of interpreted as the paycheck to paycheck is very much a decision because she doesn't want to work that much. She doesn't want to be working crazy hours. And so she's choosing to work, you know, like maybe part-time. Maybe she has a part-time job. Maybe she's a part-time server. I don't really actually know what her
I noted it because on her card, when it comes up, it says ex-tank mechanic.
Yeah, well, that was however many years ago, right?
Yeah, so I don't – but everybody else, it has their current job.
Right.
It says what her job used to be.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I just the other red flag for laziness to me was that anyone who says they want to be a stay-at-home mom – it's not that I don't think that that is like a legitimate profession. And it's not that I'm saying that, oh, that's the lazy life, a stay at home mom. Believe me, I know that it takes a lot to raise a kid and it's not always so enjoyable. But at the same time, someone who like doesn't even want to have a career or any kind of interest in doing any kind of work other than like your family, to me always seems like I'm not saying it is, but they think that's the easy way out of work. I'll just be a mom.
Yeah, I can see that. Because especially there's a difference between people who are actually stay-at-home moms and people who say they want to be stay-at-home moms.
Right. Yeah.
Having never experienced what that is.
Right. Because it's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. It is a full-time job. It's even worse than a full-time job because it literally never ends. Like at least with a job, you can like punch out. Go home.
And you live and you work in the same place, and that's hard.
Yeah, we all know that now.
Right, we all know that now, right? When you work from home, that means you also live at work.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just feel like she just doesn't have any motivation to do anything productive, contributing to society.
Right, yeah. And that's my thing, is I don't get... We're teachers. I get... service. And if she was in the military, I get being like, oh, I want to do things that help people. I want to do something that makes, even if that doesn't pay you, right? I really am into this. I would love to be able to, you know, not have to work so I can volunteer at this. Or I really, even if she was like, I'll be a stay-at-home mom because it's always been my dream to care for people and serve the children and raise up the next generation. That would make sense. But yeah, her seems to be like, I just don't like working.
Yeah, I don't want to work. I'll just stay at home. It'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially because it doesn't even seem like they've even talked about kids. Like, they haven't even talked about kids, and all of a sudden she's throwing in that she wants to be a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if Barnett was like, I don't want to have kids. Let's just have more dogs.
Right, right. And I think even if they did have kids, they're at least, like, you know, 6-7 years off of that.
Right.
Before they'd want to do it. So what are you doing for those 7 years?
Yeah, you know what? It reminds me of Jasmine from 90 Day Fiancé, Jasmine and Blake. How Jasmine just wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. It's like,
I just want to work on inner peace.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay. There was one thing that Amber said when she saw Barnett's place that I was like, that was rude. Like, she just says, oh, it seems small, you know? And considering he was insecure about how big his place is.
Sure, because he was like, this is not a place I could have a family in. Like, it's a one-bedroom, it's a one-bedroom detached house, which is unusual where I am. I don't know what it is.
Oh, yeah, super unusual here, too. But at the same time, it's kind of like, well, at least he has a house.
Yes.
And he owns a home. Like, what are you doing? You don't even have a place to rent.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and she's like, and she was like, my situation is a little fluid. The place I'm at now is going to go. I'm not going to be able to stay there for much longer. So this is ideal. Like, it almost seemed like perfect checking up. And I have a place to, so I have a place to stay.
Yeah. Awesome. So I don't know. I just thought that was really rude.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Next up, we got Jessica and Mark. So as soon as they land from Mexico, Jessica gets her phone back and she calls her mom immediately. She tells her mom that she's engaged, and Mark brings up the promised Italian beef as they FaceTime her. Jessica is hoping that living with each other will help their physical relationship progress. She points out that the bed they have is the smallest she's ever slept in. So this is in their apartment, but she has hope that she doesn't feel uncomfortable at the thought of sleeping in there with Mark. Jessica has put her ring back on, which makes Mark feel happy. Jessica says that she put it back on because she knows she needs to be open-minded and have an open heart. Jessica wants Mark to know that she's a double flusher, and she wants to mentally prepare him for any episodes of diarrhea. Speaking of brown, the next day they visit Mark's apartment, where Jessica cannot get over all the brown that's on his mattress. No, not poop, but the mismatched brown sheets. Jessica just teases Mark about everything, from his gaming system to his textbook. Jessica keeps reminding him that their age is going to affect their relationship, but Mark seems to think that they can get through everything. Jessica gets to meet his roommates, who say it was nice not having Mark around because they didn't have to buy as much food. His roommates give some insight to Mark. They say that he does everything 110%, which I mathematically have issues with, but he will not hand wash a dish, and his mom still does his laundry. Jessica says she refuses to do anyone's laundry, including her own. Jessica felt more at ease after meeting the roommates because they didn't even ask her about her age. They go to Jessica's house. She decides to bring up the fact that if she wants 3 kids, she will have to start soon. Mark assures her that he has partied enough and he's ready for the next phase. Jessica is skeptical because kids will drive guys away who are 35 plus. She just doesn't see him wanting him to settle down and then regretting it. So then she starts doing this weird math where she asks Mark to envision their kid being 24, then Mark will be 50 and she'll be 60. Mark says, cool, cool. So Jessica, ever the dark cloud, then pivots and asks what it'll do in 10 years. And then Mark has to take care of his parents. Mark seems to have a decent enough answer for almost everything, but that makes Jessica suspicious. She has never known anyone to be this emotionally available, and she just doesn't think that exists in the real world. Jessica throws out the fact that she has a 6-figure salary, and Mark says that he knows he won't be the financial provider for a while, but he knows he has a mindset where he will get there. Jessica tells us that she is intentionally challenging Mark for the good of their relationship. Mark is trying his hardest to say the right things, and Jessica is trying her hardest to rain on his parade. Jessica's takeaway from their conversation is that Mark is obsessed with his mom. Jessica then throws in that she wants a prenup before the wedding. Mark is frustrated because he hasn't hidden anything from her, and she knew what she was getting into and said yes twice. Okay, so then they have the party, and then after the party, they are in bed together, and Mark says something about Giannina being a close second to Jessica, which was obviously meant to be a compliment, meaning that Jessica is the best. And Jessica gets mad at him and distorts what he is saying. She then decides to throw out that she thinks Barnett is fucking hot. Mark gets pissed. And he goes to sleep on the couch as a drunk Messica keeps calling him baby from the bed. She passes out, it seems like, a couple seconds later, curled up with her dog, as Mark is seething on the couch, but then wakes up a few minutes later and tries one more time to get him to come back, but fails. such a mess, everything about that.
Oh, I thought Giannina was a landmine, but drunk Jessica is just... Whatever you say is not going to work.
I know. I was like, what is happening over here? He was trying to tell you that you were the best girl.
Especially because it was in response for her being like, I really like Giannina. She's really great. And he was like, oh, yeah, she's almost as good as you. And she's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
How dare you?
God, Jessica.
It's just drunk logic. It's just drunk logic.
Totally drunk logic. Okay, so then, you know, they're cuddling in the bed and, like, they're all of a sudden, it's like, you know, they seem to have somewhat recovered from the weird Giannina comment. And then Jessica brings up Barnett while they're cuddling. What the hell is that about? Why do you think she did that?
Because she was still mad about the Giannina thing because drunk logic. And she wanted to make him feel bad.
Wow. Mission accomplished. It was like, oh, gosh.
I think in her head it was like, well, if you're going to say something nice about one of the other girls, then I'm going to say something about one of the other guys.
Okay, that so makes a little bit more sense. Like, it isn't as abstract as I...
Uh-huh.
That's drunk logic I can kind of follow along with, I guess. But, okay, so Giannina says that she's trying to self-sabotage. Jessica, at every turn...
Everything is trying to sabotage. Yes.
She is, like, being mean to him. Like, I don't think that's really her, you know? It's, like, to the point where I kind of feel like she's doing that thing... where she doesn't want to be with this guy, so she's going to be kind of mean to him to kind of push him away so he'll leave her.
Yes.
You know? So she keeps on bringing up all this random crap, like, at the house, like, when they were visiting his house. Like, what was that about? She was literally making fun of everything in his house.
Mm-hmm. And did you know when he's 50, she'll be 60?
Yeah.
And then when he's 64, she'll be 74?
Yep.
And... when he was 14, she was 24.
Yeah.
And like a bunch of other ways to add 10 to a number.
It was like, what is wrong with you? Oh, did you notice he did not have a headboard?
Oh, I didn't mention
Mark
his.
Mark is not a real adult. Yep. Well, that's because he's 24, you know, and you can't possibly be a real adult at 24, at least according to Jessica.
Right. Well, I mean, how could you possibly be that emotionally available?
I know. There's something wrong with you.
So weird how it never worked out for Jessica when she thinks emotionally available guys are...
There's something wrong with them.
There's something wrong with them. So weird that she's never found a guy she really connected with before.
I feel like she was just trying to come up with everything to really just like say like, hey, this relationship isn't going to work out. You have crappy brown sheets. Oh, and then I thought it was even funny, like, when she's talking about her bathroom habits. It's almost like I feel like she wanted him to be disgusted by it.
I could see that. Because at some point she was even like, what, are you going to come inside? You're going to be able to be in the room with Mount Vesuvius going off?
It's like, yeah. It's like, why would you say that? That's so unattractive. And I feel like if she was actually, like, attracted to him and mm-hmm. she wanted him to be attracted to her... she wouldn't be throwing it out there like that. It's like,
there's
a time and place for it. Now, the first night is not the time or place for this conversation.
Right. This is more of a comfort. That's the comfort level thing. This is the I'm holding my phone at my chest, looking up my nose comfort level when you're talking about your double flushers.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So it's like she couldn't even find more things that could be wrong.
Yeah. The other thing that we talked about Amber's financial situation
mm-hmm.
and she drops her six figure thing and she just not only drops it, she makes six figures, but drops like, well, you know, for a long time, I wasn't making six figures as if like not making six figures is the real struggle. Like, could you believe it? She was only making $85,000 a year.
Wow.
And somehow she was still getting by. I mean, it took a long time before she could get there.
Yeah. It's just so obvious to me that she thinks she's too good for him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So at some point during the party, she's talking to, I can't remember who she was talking to, but she says that Mark is a girl's guy.
She was talking to Lauren. I don't know if she meant he's girly.
Right.
Or, you know, too girlish, too emotionally there. Or if he is the guy that you know, reverse it. If you say it's a guy's girl, that's somebody yeah. like Amber, who's always hanging out with the guys and showing the guys how much of a guy she is and yeah. is there. And a girl's guy is the other way. He's always there with the girls and showing how in touch he is with his emotions. And like, I'll even cry in front of people. And like, you know, see, aren't I a great boyfriend because I'm so in touch with my emotions and my feminine parts and not my feminine parts, but you know what I mean.
I heard that and I was like,
I understand. I understand women so well, and actually I don't even get along with other guys, which that's so kind of flip what Amber is, and that's a girl's guy.
Except for I think the difference is if you're a guy's girl, I don't know. I don't know if it necessarily means that you've been kind of friend zoned, but I can definitely interpret a girl's guy as this is the kind of guy that has a lot of friends that are girls, but so friend zoned.
Oh, yeah. He. If I'm thinking of high school stereotypes, mm-hmm. he's the straight guy that isn't interesting in acting, but still joins the school play.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's comfortable.
Yeah.
Sure. And so because of that, you know, he's got a lot of friends that are girls. They'll come to him and ask him boy advice.
Yeah.
You're a guy. Here, let me throw this scenario on you. All right. So that's all I had for them. I mean, it's a lot.
It was a lot.
Messica. And then,
yeah, I know. Well, and then I get to talk more about them because they still had some issues in the next one. So
right.
after everybody's had their time in their apartment, it's time for Barnett's birthday party, which Amber's going to throw. But since Barnett's family and friends don't know that he's engaged and know what happened in the show yet, he can't have them there. So it's just the couples from the show. So at the party, it's a pretty throwback to college type party. There's like they have pizza. They're drinking out of solo cups. They're playing Beirut. It's a very college type party. And at the time, everybody's kind of talking to each other. At one point, Mark is talking to Amber. And Mark is talking about how he found the rainbow. We have the comment where Jessica is talking to Lauren and says Mark is kind of a girl's guy. And Lauren for a minute thinks, are you talking about Cameron? And I was like, oh, no, Mark. Okay. Amber is scared that her relationship with Barnett's going great and there's going to be some kind of wrench that gets thrown in and just breaks everything apart. And then we get to like the meat of it. And the meat of it is when Barnett starts talking to Jessica, who's half in the bag when they start talking and only gets worse as they go.
God, yeah.
So Barnett is sitting there drinking his IPA because that's what he calls an IPA because of course he does.
Oh, God.
And, you know, he asks Jessica how things are going and she says they're okay. And she tells him that she thinks her and Mark just might be too dissimilar, which is funny because it's the opposite of what she said in the last episode where they were exactly the same person.
Yeah.
So Barnett wonders if they're so dissimilar. Why did you say yes there? Now, I should back up. Before this, Jessica had told Lauren that she did not have feelings for someone else and she was all in on Mark. But anyway, Barnett asks, why did you say yes to Mark? And it basically sounds like, well, I felt really bad that we didn't work out and he was a big puppy dog who wanted to love me. And so I said, okay. She was just so caught up in emotion, she says. And Barnett sarcastically replies, well, sounds like that'll work out. Then they start to talk about Barnett's relationship with Amber. And at this point, Jessica is clearly trying to sabotage Barnett's relationship with Amber. And she's so obvious about it that Barnett is just kind of laughing at her and smiling because he knows exactly what she's doing. She says she doesn't want Barnett to get stuck in just a purely physical relationship and that Amber doesn't have the intellectual depth to really match with Barnett. And again, he's giggling at her. And then at one point she says, do you want to visit the fact that 2 weeks ago you were so confused about what you wanted? It's wow. Then she kind of tells Barnett how into him Amber is, which kind of just is everything was designed to kind of scare Barnett off. Amber kind of doesn't hear what they say, but she kind of sees it from a distance. And she says if Jessica steps out of line one more time, she will break her face, which is one thing. But then she says, bless her heart, which, you know, if you know anything about Southerners, is a way worse thing that she said. And then when they end, it's Jess and Mark are playing Beirut against Amber and Barnett. And at this point, to try to make Barnett jealous, Jessica is all hanging all over Mark, who is just confused by this whole thing. Then we get to the fight that we kind of talked about with Jeannie and Damien. It kind of starts when, you know, Lauren says something about, oh, I really like being alone. And then Cameron just says, oh, that makes sense, which makes everything happen. Lauren kind of says, fuck you to Damien. And then it gets kind of awkward and weird because she took the comment the wrong way. And then Jeannie leaves. And then Janina accuses of being willingly awkward, and it makes her uncomfortable. It just, it's really clear that Janina does not handle awkwardness or discomfort well at all. And the conversation got a little uncomfortable, and she just noped out of the conversation and then did that weird thing where she made it worse by screaming at everybody, as if that was worse than just letting a weird comment hang into the air. But it's her second fight that kind of happened over Damien trying to awkwardly fill in the silence. But the highlight of the party, I thought, since we kind of covered that fight already, was Jessica obviously trying to get Barnett to break up with Amber.
Yeah. Okay, so something that she did that is such like, it reminds me of Clueless, if you've ever seen that movie where Cher, she tries to draw attention to her lips. And she says, like, you need to suck on something so that way, you know, they think about or show a little skin to, like, have them picture you naked. Well, I feel like Jessica did something similar. She was talking about walking around naked. And I feel like such a trick, because it's like if you're someone, you're like, oh, you walk around naked. It's like you're going to possibly envision that. It's like she definitely was trying to get Barnett to think about her naked.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You're right. I mean, everything she did was because she was drunk. And she was drunk.
Oh, yeah. The way she was hanging on Mark.
Well, even like before that, when she was talking to Barnett, she was like leaning on, she was like sitting sideways and like leaning, like slouching under the front of the chair. It's like she was. And the thing was, is we always go after Barnett for being kind of dumb and being a bro. But it looked to me, he knew exactly what was going on. And he was not fooled at all.
I was actually really proud of him, because he did not do anything to make it even seem like he was interested. He, in fact, if anything, without being rude, he seemed almost disinterested. Like he had the right level.
Right. But we know that the thing that turns Jessica off is interest. And so he would have been better off.
Oh, right.
Being more emotionally available.
Leading into this conversation. Well, he doesn't know that. Yeah, I thought him also asking like the real question, why did you say yes? I thought that was also like, I don't know.
I just get the impression he's getting tired of her.
It was the question we all needed to hear.
But he's just getting tired of her. He's like, oh my God, every time we get together, are you going to come here and do this? Like he's cool about it, but it's got to be getting real old real fast to have. I mean, somebody who's not even your ex, but is acting like an ex that's still hung up on you. Like that you have to socially interact with all the time.
Right, and I mean, even she definitely views it like she's an ex. And I find that very interesting, because she keeps on saying like, oh, well, we've dated all of you people. It's like, well, I don't know. To me, it's the same level of like you message someone on a dating app, but you never actually meet them in real life.
Even if you do meet them in real life, if you meet someone, you talk, there's no spark, you go home. I wouldn't be like, oh, we're so intimate. We're all so intimately related. I can't believe it. Like, that's,
well, I just dated all of you people. Yeah, did you?
Did you? I mean, yes, technically I went on a date with somebody, but I wouldn't be like, oh, yes, we have this intimate thing because we agreed to meet at a bar once. That was we talked a couple hours over this in where we couldn't even see each other. It's like we've all slept together. It's like, no, it's not like that at all.
Right. Okay. We didn't really dive into the Giannina Damien fight, like what started it. I was confused by what was going on with Lauren and Damien to begin with.
Yes, because again, Damien, It's awkwardness, but I don't think it was really awkward. Like it does.
I thought it was light.
It was light, and it goes. It was just like kind of okay to move along the conversation. He literally said, "Oh, that makes sense." When she said, "I like being alone," which does make sense because she's 30 years old and alone and has her own place and seems to really like it. And so I'm like, "Oh yeah, it makes sense that you enjoy being alone, knowing your personality, knowing you." And she's like, "What are you calling me, some old hag who's gonna be like what?" I feel like, and Damien didn't, I wouldn't say he gets offensive, but the way he kind of took it and was like, oh, well, you know, instead of being like, well, that's a strong reaction, you know, like if he would have called her out for being like, well, that really escalated quickly.
Right. Then it would have been fine.
Then it would have been fine. It would have made her the awkward one instead of him the awkward one.
Yeah. So I was kind of confused by what, because I was just like, what is this about exactly? I don't really understand how this conversation like got this way. But at the same time, I didn't interpret it the way Giannina did. It wasn't that terrible of a conversation. I was just confused more so than anything.
Giannina did not like that her guy was on the wrong end of that.
Yes, because it was almost like he was an embarrassment to her. That's definitely how I read that.
Yes.
But then that's the part that I was like, okay, what's wrong with you? Because I get it. You're embarrassed and you're like, oh, I don't. Because she even said, like, I don't like, you know, making a scene. It's like, yeah, but you're now making a scene.
Yes.
By making this a thing when it really didn't have to be. It could have, like, died an easy death.
Yo, very much. It could have. That's definitely just could have been like, oh, nothing. Don't worry about it. I'll just.
Right.
We'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it. Wait, later does wonders in social situations. Well, that's funny because that's what she was like. She was like, what are we missing? What's missing from a relationship? She was like, this is it. Social situations. And it was like very much like, you're an asshole. Like, you're an awkward guy. And I can't deal with that. Like, I can't deal with the cringe of being next to you when you say something that mildly embarrasses me.
Right. I think like just how she says things, I think it's just how she talks.
Mm-hmm.
It just rubs me the wrong way because she just always seems like she needs more chill in her life or something.
Yes, because everything has to be, nothing can just be a little thing. Everything has to stand in for something that's way bigger than what's going on right here.
Right.
He couldn't have misspoken. Yeah. He has to be a deeper seated reaction, and he needs to get it out, and this needs to get hashed out right here. And she's right, and I'm right, and she does have a holier than thou, like,
yes, she definitely does, and like how she talks comes off that way. Yeah,
but they just said, goodness. listen, you don't listen, I am listening, you don't listen, I am listening. Ugh.
I never thought about your interpretation of it, but I think it is pretty right on. Like, she thinks that he's not listening because he doesn't agree. Because obviously what she says is absolute gold. And so, like, if you were actually listening, you would agree.
Yes. If you were actually listening to what I think, because it makes perfect sense in my head. So right. If you were listening to it, it would make perfect sense in your head, too.
Yep. All right. Student of the week. Who'd you have?
Cameron. I know we always give it to them, but he clearly had the nicest house.
He did. Oh, my gosh. And this further goes on. My friend's going to tell me I'm thirsty for Cameron again.
But I brought it up. His house was friggin' awesome.
It is. And I was just going to say, this is like the kind of guy that he's just got his shit together.
Yes.
He's got like a real big boy job. You know, he has a big boy house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like a good looking guy. He doesn't seem to be crazy. He doesn't cause all this unnecessary drama. He seems to like know what he wants, or at least somewhat be decisive in his life. Like, this guy is a catch.
Yeah.
So if you want to say I'm thirsty for Cameron, fine.
No, I'm not thirsty for these women, so we're good.
Okay, so I had student of the week. I said Barnett.
Okay.
I thought the way he handled Jessica was the best you could have done in this situation, given Jessica.
Sure.
I also thought that how he was very careful about how he talked about his relationship with Amber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he wasn't airing out his dirty laundry with her. He wasn't bringing up any concerns. He wasn't leading Jessica on.
Because he knew.
Right.
Yeah. And if I show any, you know, chinks in this
sign
armor,
of weakness here.
She's going to poke at it and think she can break this whole relationship up. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, so good for him. I mean, there's not a lot of things that I can say good job, Barnett, but this is one of them. I will give credit where it is due. What about your dunce?
Giannina.
Okay.
That was a dumb fight that went way overboard, especially, like we mentioned it many times, it was a mild embarrassment that she turned into a gigantic scene. And the screaming at each other was way more embarrassing than however that comment he made might have been interpreted.
Right. Okay, so my dunce, probably obvious, but Jessica, my God, every opportunity in this episode, she was trying to low-key or maybe even just blatantly sabotage their relationship. You know, it was like any little dig, anything, even if it was self-deprecating, it was like all in the name of trying to get Mark to break up with her.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and then kind of going back to Barnett asking, why did you say yes? It's like, well, why didn't you just say no instead of, you know, making the other, forcing the other person to say no to you.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's what she's trying to
do. Yeah, I can't figure out that angle of what she's doing anyway. Like, usually when you get,
right.
if you get to her, and, you know, she seems to think she's this close to being a withered old hag that's going to just melt into, you know, nothing.
Right.
You know, she's so old and I'm so much older than everyone. And I have to have the babies right now. But at that point, if you're in that space in your kind of head and in your life, aren't you going to be like, I don't have time to waste with people, man. I just got to end it.
Yeah, but maybe she knows like there's an end time for this show.
That's true.
Because it's like, what, 30 days?
Yeah, I think at the end of the show, they were like 19 days away from their weddings or something.
Yeah, because I was going to say, if you told me like, hey, do you want to date this person? It's not going to last, but it'll be for 30 days. I'd be like, yeah, sure, why not? It's 30 days.
That's true. I mean,
I wouldn't say I've wasted like a huge part of my life. Now, if you said, okay,
true.
Now you have to date someone that maybe you're not that into and it's got to be like 3 years, then I would be a little bit more hesitation. Right. Like, yeah, okay, yeah, those are significant times.
30 days, free trip to Mexico. Okay.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Yeah, I think I could do that. Yeah. All right. What about your life lesson?
All right. So this came up a lot. It came up with the toothbrush a little bit. The double flushers. Kelly and Kenny with the open policy, right? Which you brought up, Lauren and Cam too, with the other place. Even married couples need their privacy. Like everybody needs privacy. Not everything. Yep. And you can devote your life to someone without having them have to be a part of every aspect of your life, even the part where you're taking a dump.
I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah, I am someone who very much appreciates their space, like even when I'm in a relationship. So, yeah, I'm okay with you loving me from afar.
Your life lesson.
All right. My life lesson is inspired by Amber. So if you are in debt, you just have to suck it up and work to pay it off if you're capable of it. So fiscal responsibility is going to pay off later. We can't all hope to marry someone and never have to work again or hope that they will pay off our debt for us.
And like I said, what you find is if you're capable of it, because there is
capable. I did say capable.
Absolutely. Yeah. People who work their ass off and are still paycheck to paycheck and are still in debt.
Yeah. I did say capable. Yeah.
But yeah, if you're capable of it, it's life is so much easier when you just actually do just put in the work and pay your bills.
Not have that hanging over your head.
Yes.
Yeah, but also I feel like this is a situation where, you know, it's like avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
It's like avoidance with the thought that someone else will save you from your problems later
mm-hmm.
and that someone is going to be your future partner. And I just don't think you should enter in a marriage having that kind of like obligation, putting that kind of obligation on someone else.
Right.
Because Barnett did not sign up. And granted, like, well, you got the $700 plus the $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what his financial situation is specifically, but, you know, but he didn't sign up for that.
He didn't sign up for it. And it's not, all things considered, that much debt. If it's just $20,700, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that can be managed, but you're right. It's like it shouldn't necessarily be his job to come in there and clear
right.
her of that.
And it's not even like, you know, it's like, okay, so I'm not going to lie. My sister was in a similar-ish situation where she dropped out of school and she ended up accruing a large amount of debt for just 1 year of like grad school and she never finished her grad degree. So she accumulated a lot of debt and her husband now, but it was her boyfriend at the time. He pretty much let her live with him rent free for a year. Well, for however long. And she paid where she could. So she would help out with utilities and things like that. But basically her rent payment was going towards her debt.
Mm-hmm.
So she was paying it off herself and he was helping her in other ways. But it sounds like Amber just doesn't even want to work at all. And she's expecting Barnett to take on her debt.
Right. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
two totally different situations. Mm-hmm. You have to contribute where you can contribute. Can't put that on someone else.
Sure.
All right. Yep, that's all we have for that. You know, I kind of feel like everybody's moved on from this show already.
I know.
Doesn't it feel that way?
It does. It does. They're coming out. Okay, so I've always felt this about Netflix. And
yeah.
I've always felt like as soon as I got around to watching something on Netflix, everybody was talking about the next thing.
Right. It's like a flash in the pan. It's like
white
hot dwarf star.
Like, I remember that the first season of Stranger Things came out and I was like, what the crap is this Stranger Things that everybody talks about for like weeks? And then when I finally watched it, I was like, oh, wait, everybody's watching something else now.
Yeah.
That's always been my issue with the Netflix dump them all at once model, is it makes everything, every show is just a flash in the pan. I mean, we're talking about this show because we've already gone. I feel like Tiger King has already run its cycle.
Oh, I know. I was going to say, Tiger King. And then what's the new one? Too Hot to Handle.
Now, Too Hot to Handle. But when you dump all the episodes at once, it's just whoosh. And then nobody talks about it again.
Right. And we've dragged this on out.
Yes.
Too. So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I don't know if that was the smartest move.
Right.
If anyone's even listening anymore. But, you know.
We'll finish it because I start when I finish. But.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. This is a lot for right now. But, you know.
Right now, what else are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. Because I was like, well, maybe we'll be at a point. We'll be opening up again. I say that very hesitantly.
Yeah, eventually we'll open back up again. But until then.
Eventually we'll have other things to do with our lives.
Yes, until then. We'll have episode 7 next time.
Yep, sounds good. All right. Okay. See ya. Bye.
Bye.